Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com. You can also find me on social media, and you can subscribe to Food for Thought wherever you listen to podcasts, on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And of course, I appreciate everyone who is subscribing, who's leaving ratings and reviews, who is supporting this podcast. This is a 100% listener-supported podcast. In fact, all I do is supported by you, anyone who is a supporter at Patreon.com. I'm very grateful. It enables me to be a voice for animals. Just know that you are supporting a grassroots advocate when you support this work at Patreon.com/Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. You can also go to joyfulvegan.com and just find it there. As I continue to put out content on Instagram, I'm working on my 7th book, which I'm very excited to share with you. It's actually available already for pre-order on Amazon. It's called The Joyful Vegan, Staying Vegan in a World That Wants You to Eat Meat, Dairy, and Eggs. And its official release date is November 2019, but you can go pre-order today. So I've got a number of podcast episodes up my sleeve, but while I work on the book and while I produce a lot of content online, I really encourage you to go check out all of the 1-minute videos I've been putting out on Instagram and on Facebook, YouTube. They're shareable, they're sound bites, they're 1 minute long, they answer the most commonly asked questions about veganism. So I'm excited to share all of my content in all these different mediums that are now available to us. So just because you don't hear me on the podcast doesn't mean I'm not out there getting this message out. So your support really does support all of the ways that I get my message out, not just this podcast. So I'm encouraging you to please become a sponsor. Every moment of my day is spent being a voice for animals, and I'm grateful for your support. So while I work on some new podcast episodes, I'd like to invite you to sit back and listen to a rebroadcast of one of the popular episodes from Food for Thought from several years ago. So let's get started with today's topic. With the outbreak of the most recent strain of swine flu, many people are asking where it came from and how to prevent it. The pork industry, if you've listened closely enough, has been quick to ensure people that they cannot catch it, they cannot get the swine flu by eating pork, and have provided media outlets with recipes and reassurance, all the while urging them to refrain from using the phrase swine flu, lest it scare people from buying their products. Now, it's true that swine flu is not transmitted by the consumption of pigs, but it's also true that it is our very consumption of pigs and other animals that puts us at risk in the first place. This always seems to be the missing piece in media stories. We talked about this a bit in the podcast episode called The Taming of the Cattle, and we're going to elaborate on it today. Basically, when humans began domesticating cattle and pigs and sheep and goats and eventually chickens and turkeys and other animals, it meant that people lived in close proximity with animals, breathing, eating, and drinking their germs, literally. They devised rituals and sacrificial rites to ward off disease, but disease spread nonetheless, both among the animals themselves and also to humans. A phenomenon called zoonosis, that's Z-O-O, meaning animal, and N-O-S-I-S, zoonosis, which means the transmission of infectious disease from non-humans to humans. So these are called zoonotic diseases. These are diseases that are transmitted from non-humans to humans. And it can also go from human to non-human. That's often called reverse zoonosis. And being animals ourselves, it makes sense that we share many of the same diseases as our non-human cousins. We aren't, after all, plants. We aren't at risk for catching aphids or sooty mold or downy mildew. In fact, many of the major killer pandemics we've been plagued with were acquired from non-human animals. These are just a few. We got tuberculosis from cattle, influenza from pigs and birds, whooping cough from pigs and dogs, smallpox from cattle, and of course, cowpox from cows. Even HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, is believed to have been first transmitted to humans through the butchering and consumption of infected chimpanzees. The development of vaccines provided humans with immunity to certain diseases, and the word itself reveals the origin of these zoonotic infections. At its root is the Latin word vacca, meaning cow, referring to the fact that early vaccines, especially for smallpox, for cowpox, contained some of the cattle diseases from which they were trying to protect humans.
Now, the agents of zoonotic diseases may be parasites, they may be fungi, they may be bacteria, they may be viruses, or they may be prions. It's the agent that determines how the zoonosis, how the infectious disease, is spread. They may be spread through the air, through bodily secretions such as blood, semen, saliva, through liquids, through contaminated objects, or through a vector. This is an organism who carries the disease, like a mosquito that carries malaria would be considered a vector, or through food. Now, these are foodborne illnesses. We hear a lot about foodborne illnesses all the time, so I thought we would start there. So basically, foodborne illnesses, a foodborne disease, is caused by consuming contaminated foods or beverages. And there are many different microbes or pathogens or germs or infectious agents, whatever you want to call it, that can cause disease. More than 250 different foodborne diseases have been described. Once the microbe or the toxin enters the body through the gastrointestinal tract, that's where the symptoms first appear. That's why we experience nausea, vomiting, abdominal cramps, diarrhea upon ingestion. Now, according to the United States Center for Disease Control, the CDC, there are an estimated 76 million cases of foodborne illness each year in the United States. Most of these cases are mild and they make people sick for a day or two. Some are more serious and require hospitalization, and some result in death. The CDC estimates that there are 325,000 hospitalizations and about 5,000 deaths related to foodborne diseases each year. The most severe cases do tend to occur in the very old, in the very young, those who have an illness that compromises their immune system, and also in healthy people who are exposed to very high doses of an organism. You can see all of this on the CDC's website and the Center for Disease Control's website. Now, the foodborne disease can be broken down according to their agent. Remember, the agent can be parasitic, bacterial, viral, fungal, or caused by prions. We're not going to be able to cover them all here today. For instance, the prion issue, most familiar to you in relation to BSE. BSE is bovine spongiform encephalopathy. That's the disease also called mad cow disease, and that actually has to do with prions. But I mean, you can do a whole episode specifically on that, and it's pretty large. So we're not going to be able to cover all of these, obviously. So I thought we would just start with a few. And I thought we would start with the bacterial foodborne illnesses that you're most likely familiar with. And then we'll talk about a few in detail. So yeah, I'm sure you've heard of botulism. You may have heard of Brucella or Campylobacter. Certainly you've heard of E. coli, Listeria, Salmonella, Staphylococcus food poisoning, and Streptococcus foodborne. These are just a few of the bacterial foodborne illnesses. Now, for our purposes, what I want to emphasize are those zoonotic bacterial foodborne diseases that are dangerous to us because we're animals contaminated by animals, not plants. In other words, plants can be carriers of zoonotic diseases, and of course, the plants aren't at risk for contracting these diseases, so they just carry the zoonotic diseases, but it's not the plant's fault if they're contaminated with the disease, contaminated by an animal. Hopefully that's clear to you. It becomes clear as we start illustrating some of these diseases. The most commonly reported foodborne illness is from a bacterial pathogen called Campylobacter. It causes fever, diarrhea, and abdominal cramps. It's the most commonly identified bacterial cause of diarrheal illness in the world. These bacteria live in the intestines of healthy birds. They're asymptomatic. The birds are asymptomatic. They don't have any symptoms. So the bacteria live in the intestines of healthy birds. And most raw poultry, quote, meat, has Campylobacter on it. So eating undercooked chicken and other food that has been contaminated with juices dripping from raw chickens is the most frequent source of this infection. According to the latest estimates from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, though many cases go undiagnosed or unreported, Campylobacteriosis is estimated to affect over 2.4 million persons every year. According to the USDA's own publication, Food Safety Review, 88% of poultry sampled from local supermarkets tested positive for the bacteria. 88%. Also, in that same publication, it reported that Campylobacter was found on up to 100% of the chickens coming out of the chill tank. So Consumer Reports wanted to replicate this study. And so in 2007, they did their own research. They bought 525 broiler chickens nationwide from grocery stores, all different kinds of grocery stores from all around the country, and tested them for both salmonella and campylobacter. Campylobacter was present in 81% of the chickens. Salmonella was present in 15%, and both bacteria were present in 13%. Oh, and they also found that chickens labeled as organic or raised without antibiotics were more likely to harbor salmonella than were conventionally produced broilers. I'm just saying. I don't know about you, but that doesn't exactly make me want to run out and have a chicken sandwich. And I have to tell you that just hearing this again reminds me of the section in Gail Eisnitz's book, Slaughterhouse. I know I've talked about this book before, where she talks all about chicken processing plants. And I have to tell you, it ain't pretty. I think one thing people have definitely put out of their minds when they see their chicken sandwich is they have completely forgotten about it. I don't even know if they've even thought about it, about how dirty and disgusting slaughterhouses and processing plants are. Really, really disgusting. I wanted to read you this excerpt. I have to read this excerpt to you. It's in Slaughterhouse, and it was something that stuck with me when I first read this book, and I've never forgotten it, and that was many, many years ago. Let me just read this to you. This is from a worker. She's a former Purdue worker, who looks like she testified to Congress on the conditions of poultry plants. So let me just read to you what her testimony said. The floors are covered with grease, fat, sand, and roaches. Bugs are up and down the sides of the walls. Some of the flying roaches were huge, up to 4 and 5 inches long. We joke that you could put a collar on them and walk them. There are flies all around, including big blowflies. Employees are constantly chewing and spitting out snuff and tobacco on the floor. There's so much fecal contamination on the floor. Fecal contamination is poop. On the floor from chickens, that it kept getting into one worker's boots and burned his feet so badly his toenails had to be amputated. The waste is not always from the chickens. The company won't allow workers to leave the line when they have to go to the bathroom. Usually they just suffer and put a strain on their bodies, but sometimes they have to relieve themselves on the floor. The problems are just as bad in the slaughter process as they are in the plants generally. After they are hung, sometimes the chickens fall off into the drain that runs down the middle of the line, and this is where roaches, intestines, diseased parts, fecal contamination, and blood are washed down. Workers get sick to their stomachs into the drain. The drain is a lot less sanitary than anybody's toilet. That doesn't seem to matter, though. The Purdue supervisors told us to take the fallen chickens out of the drain and send them back down the line. So there you go. Little bit of information there. So that's Campylobacter. Let's take a look at salmonella and some recent cases of salmonella, what it is and how it wound up in our food system. So second to Campylobacter in terms of cases reported, salmonella is a bacterium. It was discovered about 100 years ago by an American scientist named Dr. Daniel E. Salmonella. And it's widespread in the intestines of birds, reptiles, and mammals. The illness it causes, salmonellosis, okay, typically includes fever, diarrhea, abdominal cramps. And according to the CDC, there are some 40,000 cases of salmonella infection each year. About 600 of them are fatal. Salmonella lives in the intestinal tract of humans and other animals, including birds, and it's usually transmitted to humans by eating foods of animal origin or non-animal foods contaminated with animal feces. If meat is not cooked to what they call a safe minimum internal temperature, salmonella present on raw meat, and this includes fish, definitely survives. So break out those meat thermometers like they recommend to determine that safety level, and good luck with that. And be careful when licking that raw egg-based cake batter. No concern with vegan cakes, but you gotta be careful if you're eating anything that has raw eggs in it. And be sure to scour your cutting board and your knife and any utensils you use, and thoroughly wash your hands when dealing with raw meat and eggs. Oh, and be careful that a food that's fully cooked doesn't come in contact with raw meat, as the foods that are already cooked can be recontaminated if it touches contaminated raw foods or even drippings from raw meat that contain pathogens. None of these things are concerns in a vegan kitchen. There are a lot of concerns about foodborne illness in a kitchen with meat and eggs. Now, does that mean that there's no risk for these diseases like salmonella in a kitchen with only plants, like a vegan kitchen? Now, in terms of contamination occurring in the kitchen, yes, there's no concern. I mean, there, because you don't have the things that cause the contamination. You don't have the meat and the eggs. But in terms of what you can bring into that kitchen that's already contaminated, unfortunately, no, there is a risk in that sense. The risk of salmonella contamination is definitely drastically reduced in a vegan kitchen, or just if you're vegan. But I say reduced and not eliminated because unwittingly and unintentionally and certainly unfairly, you might bring in a plant-based food that has already been contaminated. And when this happens, when plants become contaminated, everyone becomes frightened of the plants. Whenever there's an outbreak of some foodborne illness, I'm driven mad by the way it's explained in the media. For instance, do you remember the salmonella scare in 2008? Hundreds of people became ill. I think ultimately more than 1,300 people fell ill. And they thought at first it was from the tomatoes, so everyone stopped eating tomatoes. Then they realized it was from the serrano peppers in Mexico. Do you remember this? And all everyone could talk about were how peppers and tomatoes were so scary. Now, I'm not making light of public health concerns when people become ill and sometimes die. But when the officials finally released that the contamination was coming from a pepper farm in Mexico, they still didn't explain why the peppers were contaminated in the first place. So people hearing the news stories or reading them or seeing them don't really think much deeper about this. And they just assume that there's something wrong with peppers, something wrong with those peppers, that the peppers were the cause of the illness. Peppers may have become contaminated with the bacterium salmonella, but they weren't the cause. Plants don't have intestines. Salmonella is an intestinal bacterium. Plants do not cause the disease. They become carriers for it. And the reason the peppers were contaminated is because the irrigation water for the pepper crops were contaminated with salmonella, and salmonella is in the waste of animals, in the intestines and in the waste of animals. They were never able to find the original source, but they concluded that it was waste from either animals or humans that got into the irrigation water, contaminated it with salmonella, and then that water was used to irrigate the pepper crops. It wasn't the peppers' fault that they got contaminated, but they were most certainly demonized. And I have to tell you this. I don't know if you follow PCRM's wonderful work, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're at pcrm.org. But to emphasize the points that I'm making here, they put out this really awesome press release, complete with a photo of founder Dr. Neil Barnard standing in front of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services building in Washington, D.C., where they had spelled out using 1,000 tomatoes that were eventually donated to a food bank. So spelled out using 1,000 tomatoes, because at first they thought it was the tomatoes. It's the meat, stupid, is what they said. I didn't say that. But they wrote out, it's the meat, stupid, right in front of the Department of Health and Human Services. I'll put the picture up on my message board. It's really awesome. So, you know, obviously we're all on the same page and we're all making this point here. And something similar happened in early 2009 when peanut butter and peanut paste used for commercial products were contaminated with salmonella, resulting in the FDA recalling hundreds of commercial products that contained peanut butter. Ultimately, over 530 people were sickened in 43 states, and the last count I saw was that 8 people died. Now, there's was definitely criminal activity going on at this peanut plant in Texas, and an investigation is still underway at the time of this recording. The parent company, Peanut Corp of America, was basically finding salmonella in their products, but they were sending them off to various laboratories until they could get a clean result. So there were egregious cover-ups and criminal and unethical things going on at this peanut plant. And perhaps you even heard that much. I mean, that certainly made the news, obviously. And perhaps you heard about the disgusting conditions of the peanut plant in Texas, so there's no surprise they were finding salmonella at the plant. And so perhaps that was clear to you why there was salmonella in the peanut butter, but I'm not sure that you heard that the reason the salmonella was even able to contaminate the plant food, in this case peanuts, was because of the presence of dead animals, of live animals. There were bird feathers, bird poop, and rodent excrement inside the plant. So, I think the reporters mentioned this. I mean, I heard this on the news, but not to the degree that it really helps people understand that the peanuts were contaminated and thus passed the disease on to us, and we get it because we're animals. Does that make sense? Now, another bacterial zoonotic disease that can also be foodborne is E. coli. The E stands for Escherichia, but E is a lot easier to say. Escherichia coli, so E. coli. And a particularly virulent strain of E. coli is that which is named 0157H7, which hangs out in cattle and other similar animals such as deer. So people who eat beef and venison are at risk of infection, most certainly. And when humans fall ill from E. coli, it's typically because they consume food or water that was contaminated with microscopic amounts of cow feces. Now, the illness it causes is often a severe and bloody diarrhea, painful abdominal cramps. In 3 to 5% of cases, a complication called hemolytic uremic syndrome, HUS, can occur several weeks after the initial symptoms. And these severe complications include temporary anemia, profuse bleeding, and kidney failure. For those unlucky enough to go through this, it is absolutely horrific and incredibly painful. So to further our point here, perhaps you remember the E. coli outbreak on spinach in 2006. Hundreds of people fell ill, 3 people died. And as in the case of the serrano peppers in Mexico, in this instance, the contamination was traced to a field that included the presence of pigs, who most likely contaminated the irrigation water with their poop. Cattle and other wildlife were also potential contaminators. Dr. Kevin Riley from the California Department of Health Services said, "Animals, wildlife, and water were in close proximity to the field. We have evidence for fences torn down, wildlife going into the actual spinach fields themselves. There's clear evidence that the pig population has access and goes into the field." So that's how they were able to trace the bacteria in the spinach with the bacteria in these pigs. And again, spinach wasn't the problem. It was a zoonotic microbe. We got sick because we're not spinach. We're animals, and we eat animals, which increases our chances of these diseases being transmitted to us. I mentioned that E. coli likes to hang out in cattle, and I'm not kidding. They just basically hang out in the intestines of cattle. And cattle have been implicated as the most important source of E. coli 0157H7. Prevalence estimates vary, but it appears that a substantial percentage of both dairy herds and beef feedlots have infected animals. In fact, the 2002 USDA NAHMS, I'm giving you a lot of abbreviations here, the National Animal Health Monitoring System, that's NAHMS, study found that 38.5% of dairy farms had at least one cow that was culture positive. So finally, just to drive home my point, I don't know if you remember back in 1996, I remember this very clearly, when Odwalla apple juice was contaminated with E. coli, 0157H7. Well, again, because it wouldn't have been the apples that had the disease, how do you think they got contaminated? What they determined was that the apples had fallen to the ground. There's a term called grounders in the industry, in the apple industry. And the apples had come into contact with animal feces, those that had fallen onto the ground. And because heat processing, such as pasteurization, kills the organism, after this event, Odwalla began pasteurizing its juices. And this outbreak also spurred a response by the federal government, which now requires warning labels to be placed on all unpasteurized fruit and vegetable juice containers. I know there are a lot of people who are against pasteurization, but certainly that's one way to kill the organism. So that's what started happening after the Odwalla E. coli outbreak. So I hope that all makes sense to you. I just want to be clear that I'm making a few points here. One is that we're animals and thus susceptible to zoonotic diseases, not plant diseases. Two, that the more animals and animal secretions we consume, the higher our risk. And three, when vegetables get contaminated, it's an anomaly. It's not the plant's fault because plants just get contaminated by infected animals. So when a vegetable crop is contaminated, of course, follow the safety precautions provided by the experts. But eating only plant foods, being vegan, even though these contaminations do occur, you're still at just a much lower risk of getting these diseases than if you're eating animals and their secretions, obviously, because the odds just go way, way, way down. And sometimes contamination can occur via a wild animal. That's true. Sometimes even via a human. But when you're eating animals or drinking her milk or eating her eggs, you can be sure that you're taking a chance because it's an animal you're eating. Does that make sense? Let me put it another way. You can imagine how frustrated I am by the experts who, when asked what people can do to prevent foodborne illnesses, they never, ever say, don't eat animals. God forbid they recommend that people just, you know, really, really lessen their chances by not consuming animals or cooking with animals and bringing them into their kitchen. In fact, one website that I was looking at was dedicated to veterinary medicine for food production animals. And I was just struck by this conclusion. And I've seen it again and again in my research. This is what they said. For this foreseeable future, the reality is that E. coli 0157H7, they're talking about in this particular case, must be viewed as a foodborne zoonosis whose control rests with the consumer. So cook your beef. It cannot be reasonably eliminated at the farm level until a great deal more is known about risk factors for infection of cattle. And this is just one example of the same message. I've seen this again and again. You'll see this on the CDC website. The best the experts can offer is to cook your meat because it cannot be reasonably eliminated at the farm and animal factory level. Of course it can. Where there are animals, there is risk of infection. And if we reduce the number of animals in this world and we stopped eating animals, our risk declines substantially. So I've been talking a lot about plant foods that become contaminated by infected animals. How does the meat itself become contaminated with the microbes? How does that take place? So now you know that fruits and vegetables become contaminated when irrigated or washed with water that's been contaminated by animal manure or human waste. Well, in terms of contaminated meat, remember, we're talking about microbes that live in the intestines of animals. And of course, during the slaughter process, intestines are pulled out of each and every animal, and the animal carcasses can become contaminated by coming into contact with even the smallest amounts of intestinal contents. It doesn't take much. One chicken carcass can be exposed to the drippings and liquids of many thousands of other birds that went through the same cold water tank after slaughter. In that sense, any time many individual animals or the secretions of many individual animals are mingled, there is even greater danger for contamination. So, for instance, bulk raw milk or raw eggs that are pooled together or ground beef. These are particularly hazardous because a pathogen present in any one of the animals may contaminate the whole batch. A single hamburger may contain meat from hundreds of animals. A single restaurant omelet may contain eggs from hundreds of chickens. A glass of raw milk may contain milk from hundreds of cows. And then there are the animal-based products that people do eat raw. There's, of course, raw cow's milk and raw goat's milk, and those proponents will tell you that raw is best because they don't want to have their milk pasteurized. And some people eat raw eggs or eggs only partially cooked. Some people eat raw honey. Some people eat raw shellfish. And all of these things are concerns. Filter feeding shellfish, such as oysters, they strain the microbes from the sea over many months, and they're particularly likely to be contaminated, especially, you know, if there are pathogens in the seawater. And of course, raw foods are the most likely to be contaminated, which is why the experts recommend that you cook your meat. But remember from the barbecue episode, you don't want to cook it too much. Cancer-causing compounds called heterocyclic amines form on cooked meat. That includes beef, chicken, and fishes. And they do not form on cooked plant foods. These cancer-causing compounds do not form on plant foods when they're cooked, but they form on meat when the meat is cooked. It seems like such a gamble to me. It's like, did I cook it enough to prevent a bacterial infection, or did I cross the line and now I'm consuming cancer-causing substances because I cooked it too much? And they don't really know what level at which you have to not cook it too high, because you might then get these heterocyclic amines. They're present just when you cook it at a normal level. Oh, but, you know, the government ensures that consumers could look to irradiated meat soon. That's meat that's exposed to radiation to blast away any of the pathogens. But the radiation is in small amounts that wouldn't harm people. How about you just suggest people don't eat it at all? So we take all of these drastic measures, like irradiating our meat, so that we can prevent these pathogens from forming. That certainly doesn't take care of all the other problems with it. So there's your choice. You go for it. Now, we're still under bacterial zoonotic infectious diseases here, though right now I want to move away from foodborne. Okay, so we're still under bacterial infectious diseases, but we're moving away from foodborne. And tuberculosis, which kills nearly 2 million people annually, is an example of an airborne infectious disease that we also got from cattle. The earliest evidence we have of the tuberculosis bacterium is in the remains of bison, dated 18,000 years before the present. 18,000 years ago. In fact, tuberculosis was originally transmitted to humans through human consumption of cow's milk. I just want to read this quote to you from an article called Milk as a Vector of Transmission of Bovine Tuberculosis to Humans in Spain, a Historical Perspective. It's the name of the article. And here's just a quote. As was the case with meat, the detection of the tuberculosis bacterium in cattle resulted in the attribution of an important role to milk in human tuberculosis infection. However, the case of milk had a more serious impact with graver consequences than did meat. In effect, milk was the principal foodstuff by means of which tuberculosis was passed from cattle to humans. Indeed, it could be said that it was the only effective vector that carried the bovine bacterium to the human organism. In light of this information, this article makes the case that milk acted as the most common means of transmission of bovine tuberculosis to humans. So there you go. Airborne bacterial zoonotic infectious disease originally transmitted to humans through our consumption of cow's milk. It's tuberculosis. Anthrax is another bacterial zoonotic infection that can enter the human body through a few ways. It can enter it through ingestion being the first. So technically, I suppose, you know, this would be a foodborne illness. But it can also enter through the lungs, through inhalation, or through the skin cutaneously. Now, again, non-humans played a critical role in the epidemiology of infection in humans, and virtually all cases of human anthrax can be directly or indirectly linked to an infected animal. Specific people at risk include veterinarians, slaughterhouse workers, animal herders, and those who work in processing plants. Humans can be infected via direct contact with infected animals. So these are like farmers and abattoir slaughterhouse workers, veterinarians. It can happen through occupational exposure with contaminated animal products. So those working with sheep and goat hides, there's something called wool sorter's disease. Another way is ingestion of meat from infected animals. Milk can also contain the organism in the end stages of the disease, but apparently milk is rarely considered a significant risk factor for human infection because at this point, by the time you're taking the milk, the animals appear so sick that most people would not consider drinking the milk. And I'll talk a bit about what happens to the animals who have anthrax. And then you can get it through contact with soils that were contaminated by an infected animal. In humans, respiratory anthrax is rarely treatable and it's fatal. Okay, so it's not something to mess with. Gastrointestinal anthrax, often caused by eating infected meat, causes the vomiting of blood, severe diarrhea, acute inflammation of the intestinal tract, pretty serious stuff. Fatality rates are still high, but treatment can occur. Cutaneous anthrax can be treated. It's marked by a boil-like skin lesion that eventually forms an ulcer. So those are the three different types of anthrax. In cattle, the disease usually proceeds very, very quickly, often in a matter of hours. They also experience bloody diarrhea. They have They have bloody urine, and blood comes from their noses. Anthrax spores are incredibly potent. They can survive for more than 100 years in the ground. Cattle contract the disease when they eat the spores, and other animals, bison, horses, sheep, llamas, elk, deer, these are all animals affected by anthrax. But don't worry, as long as you don't eat an infected animal, you should be fine. Oh, and if you do eat animals, cook them really well. Just burn them. I keep coming back to this because it's just so amazing to me that it's the only choice they give to people. Okay. You're not eating animals. You're not eating animal secretions. You want to know precautions you can take to prevent foodborne illnesses. First and foremost, like I said before, when there is an outbreak and plant foods have been contaminated, please do follow the government guidelines, but pay close attention. I mean, when the peanut butter recall happened, I didn't stop eating peanut butter because I knew that the salmonella was in peanut butter sold commercially for processed products like cookies and candies and bars, and I don't eat that stuff, so that didn't affect me. And I also knew that jarred peanut butter wasn't affected, only vats of this peanut butter that had been sent to school. So I felt safe eating it just because I was clear about what the precautions were, but do follow the guidelines and be smart about it. Second, people ask me all the time if I wash my produce, how I wash, what I wash it with. And honestly, I just wash my produce with running tap water, but I do wash it. And to be honest, I do also tend to remove and discard the outermost leaves of lettuce and cabbage and things like that. I don't know. That's just how I am. I like the extra precaution. Even though I'm buying organic, I just usually remove kind of the outer leaves of things like lettuce heads. Third, don't spread it yourself. Obviously, if you've just changed a baby's diaper and cleaned the cat's litter box, you want to clean your hands thoroughly before prepping food. That should be a given. Fourth, buy local. Now, it's true that buying produce from local farms isn't necessarily a guarantee that we won't get sick or ever contract these zoonotic diseases. Produce can become contaminated with human or animal feces on any size farm, anywhere in the world. Physical contact with runoff water near feedlots, overflowing manure lagoons, contaminated irrigation water containing raw sewage, inadequate farm worker toilet facilities, poor hygiene among these workers, all of these present universal contamination hazards. But when something does go wrong on a smaller scale, on a local scale, fewer people get sick and it's easier to trace. Plus, there are all those other great reasons to buy from local farmers. Flavor, freshness, accountability, fewer resources going from farm to farmer's market, etc. So buy local as much as you can. Fifth, grow your own food and grow it without animal manure. Go back to the How Does Your Garden Grow episode for info and tips. But just start growing something in your yard, on your deck, on your balcony, on your windowsill, and growing it veganically, if you will, without any animal products. Ensure that there will be no contamination because you're not using potentially contaminated, potentially hazardous animal manure or animal bones or animal blood. Okay. All right. Just for fun, let's move on to viruses. So we did bacterial infections again. There are a lot more. There are a lot of bacterial infections that aren't foodborne too, but I can't get into all of them here. So I'm going to move on to viruses, and really all we're going to talk about is influenza. Now, I could do an entire episode, several episodes on influenza or any of these diseases alone. So I'm just offering a cursory glance at this disease for our purposes today. So let's just look briefly at influenza. Influenza viruses are a common respiratory disease in humans around the world. In addition, they are in other animals as well, including poultry, quote unquote. So these are the animals that in the food industry would be considered poultry, turkeys and chickens, horses, pigs, marine mammals, and birds, water birds, such as ducks, geese, other waterfowl. And in fact, the influenza virus migrates between humans, pigs, and birds. You probably all became expert at this when the whole swine flu broke out. So let me just read to you a bit from a veterinary website regarding the zoonotic aspect of influenza. This is the same one I mentioned before. Quote, until recently, the species barrier for influenza viruses between humans and birds was thought to be quite strong. However, several pieces of evidence point to the fact that avian influenza viruses can, under certain circumstances, be directly infectious for people without passing through pigs as an intermediate adaptation host. I have to tell you, like I said, there's a lot to cover on influenza. If you want an incredibly comprehensive, and I mean comprehensive, telling of bird flu, please read Dr. Michael Greger's book, Bird Flu, A Virus of Our Own Hatching. It's brilliant, and it is incredibly dense and comprehensive. You can buy it through my Amazon store if you want to just have the book, or you can read the entire book online at birdflubook.com. Now, regarding swine flu, it's a respiratory disease in pigs as well as humans. In water birds, such as ducks, however, influenza is a gastrointestinal disease and it's subclinical, meaning there's no symptoms. It's undetectable. So they go through the system, the food system, not knowing whether they have bird flu or not. Anyway, it's respiratory disease in pigs, exacerbated by industrialized systems that keep pigs crammed by the thousands into large sheds with no ventilation, little or no ventilation. I'm sure you know all of this. Each individual pig is kept in a crate so small he or she can barely stand up, can barely turn around, barely lie down and extend their limbs. And in such stressful conditions, what happens is the immune system breaks down, making the animals even more susceptible to disease. And of course, all of this is so that we can eat them. Diseased, sick, unhappy animals killed by poorly paid workers who were then exposed to infected animals. People who work with birds and pigs, especially people with intense exposures, are at increased risk of zoonotic infection. So I said before that even though we may not contract swine flu by eating pigs, in the sense influenza is not a foodborne illness, it is our very domesticating and commodifying and confining of pigs that got us into trouble in the first place. If we weren't eating them, there wouldn't be millions of pigs in the world with the potential of carrying disease. We only have them here so we can kill them. And it's only getting worse, especially as countries like India and China increase their consumption of animals. Here are some stats from the Economic Research Service at the USDA. Back in 1980, the per capita meat consumption in China was about 44 pounds a year. It now tops 110 pounds. In 1983, the world consumed 152 million tons of meat a year. 1983, 152 million tons of meat. By 1997, consumption was up to 233 million tons. And the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization estimates that by 2020, world consumption could top 386 million tons of pork, chicken, beef, and farmed fish. So that's all I got for now. As always, I'm just scratching the surface here. There's so much to say about other zoonotic agents and diseases, including cholera, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That's the one that's transmitted to humans by cattle infected with bovine spongiform encephalopathy or mad cow disease. There's Ebola, hepatitis A, listeriosis, listeria, the bubonic plague or the pneumonic plague, rabies, ringworms, toxoplasmosis, trichinosis, West Nile virus, yellow fever, and that's just a partial list. I don't know how all you feel about this, but my perspective is that our abusive nature, our exploitation of animals, our perception of animals as mere production units, all of this is biting us in the butt. We are breeding disease and suffering for it. And frankly, it's not just physical disease that we're breeding. You simply cannot kill that many animals and get away with it on a metaphysical level. I'm sorry, it's just not possible. What goes around comes around one way or another. For the animals, this is Colleen. Thanks for listening.